Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The slaughter and suffering in Gaza continue unabated. Israel appears not only determined to eliminate Hamas, but the Palestinians living in Gaza as well. This is only possible with the blessing of the United States. This murderous affair is being underwritten by Joe Biden in the name of the American people. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Toronto, we have Judith Deutsch. She is a member of Independent Jewish Voices Canada. And in Beirut, we cross to Leila Hartom. She is a MENA expert and independent war reporter. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Lionel, let me go to you first here. I want to give you a quote, and I'd like your reaction. We have a retired IDF general named Itzhak Brick. Quote, "All of our missiles, the ammunition, the precision-guided bombs, all of the planes and bombs, it's all from the U.S. The minute they turn off the tap, you can't keep fighting. You have no capability. Everyone understands that it cannot fight this war without the United States." So this is America's war, and it's a choice. Lionel.
You could have taken that same quote, Peter, and applied the word Ukraine. It could have been from Zelensky. It could have been. And here's the best part. Americans maintain this perpetual ambulatory confusion, this detachment. We are unable to fight any wars here, number one. We are in the most perilous of economic times. We have cities that are absolutely being clobbered by crime. In my city of New York, we're cutting back on police and fire to handle people from other countries. And yet, while this is going on, the American public, as an election is coming forth, nobody seems to be even remotely involved in this. Because, Peter, I think there's something weird that's almost organic. We have this almost patellar, obeisant, Pavlovian belief that all wars are good, and that if we are involved in a war, it is ipso facto correct and noble. And we have to disabuse ourselves and disconnect ourselves of this. I don't think the American public has any idea. The question is, where are we getting the money? What is the end game? And as Colin Powell said, if you break it, you own it. Well, the world's going to be broken. Who's going to own and who's going to put it back together again? Those are the questions.
Well, in recent public opinion polls show that the majority, and in some cases supermajorities, want to permanent ceasefire in Gaza, though the elites act otherwise, like they did with Ukraine. Jude, if I can go to you, I mean, I'm sure you're well aware, unfortunately, that the U.S. Congress, not the smartest people in the room, passed a resolution that essentially criminalizes being anti-Zionist with being anti-Semitic. Now, Judith, I would assume that you're not a self-hating Jew. I would assume that you're not anti-Semitic. But they're passing these kinds of resolutions in your name. And I'm an American citizen. They're doing it in my name. Lionel is an American citizen. They're doing it in his name. Judith.
Yes, I'm speaking for myself, although I'm also a member of Independent Jewish Voices. But I, for one, I think that it's erroneous to blame the public, blame people. You know, it's particular groups, particular interests, and so on. You know, in the United States and in our countries, in terms of anti-Semitism and criticizing Israel, you know, it's an absurd allegation. You know, criticizing Israel and the people, the Jewish citizens of Israel, is very factual. You know, 95%, 90 to 95% of Israelis have approved of every, you know, horrible massacre and the siege of Gaza. You know, I think there's five awful massacres, you know, involving many breaches of international law, the use of illegal weapons and so on, the destruction of the health infrastructure. So this is very different from anti-Semitic tropes and images about Jewish people. the people also, I mean, an irony is that people like Orban, the new president of Argentina, this Christian Zionist, Hagee, are embraced by Israeli, by Netanyahu, and by, you know, Jewish other people who are defending this resolution. You know, they're the ones who are using the 19th and Holocaust images of Jewish people.
Yep.
So, you know, it's very absurd. You know, Zionism idealized Herzl and others, you know, idolized a different kind of Jewish person. They themselves had these anti-Semitic images, and they wanted to create, you know, a new Jew who's modeled on the American cowboy and on Prussian aristocrats. So the whole thing is very, you know, ahistorical.
Yeah, well, and it's very dangerous, too, because it makes people act in the worst possible way. I'd like to point out to everyone, in the United States, you can criticize the U.S. government, you can criticize other states in the Union, but now you can't criticize a foreign country. How did we get here? Leila, let me go to you in Beirut. The West likes to bandy about the word genocide, and it's always against their foes, their adversaries, and it's always, in my mind, it's an exaggeration almost all the time. But it's almost kind of foreboding to use the word genocide now. If this isn't a genocide that's being played out in Gaza, then what is a genocide? Can you explain that to our viewers?
I have to explain one thing. I've lived under occupation for almost most of my life, and the death of one person is one too many. The death of 10, the death of 100, the death of 1,000. Now we're crossing the 15,000 mark. When are they going to call it a genocide? It's a genocide. If not a genocide, it's a Holocaust. And if they don't want to call it a genocide, basically, then we shouldn't be calling any of the massacres that happened throughout history as genocide or Holocausts. So the idea, when you have over 40,000 injured people and over 15,000 deaths, mostly women and children, that's a genocide. And it's a shame on the Western world not to basically recognize it as such because of their bias towards Israel. They are giving Israel impunity. They are helping it to ride above international law and continue to commit murder against innocent children, women, elderly, and men. Palestinians are natives of Palestine, and because they are defending their right to live as human beings, after basically being living for almost 8 decades, enslaved by the Israelis, not allowed to breathe, not allowed to travel, not allowed to move as they please freely, then basically whatever happens to them, according to the West, is nothing because they consider them animals. This is not acceptable.
Well, Lionel, what has happened to international humanitarian law? What state, no state in the West can ever invoke it again because it has become null and void. There is no such thing then. I mean, because you cannot have international humanitarian law with an exception. You can't do it that way. Then all of it's void. Lionel.
You know, Peter, I'm a lawyer by profession.
That's why I'm asking you. That's why I'm asking you.
Yes. And I am, I guess I tend to lean always towards parsing and articulating the definition. And we get into this kind of a Socratic, what about this and that? I've never seen anybody or any other situation where it is clear where words like genocide or apartheid or ethnic cleansing or whatever you want to call it, siege, and it, all of these words are applied, and we did it to Americans in Vietnam. We have no problem with this. For some reason, when it comes to this particular instance, all goes out the window. We say, well, I don't know if this is apartheid technically. When you hear Nelson Mandela, who I think knows a little bit more about it, use the term, you get, well, you know, he did, that was then. You know, one of the things, so I must say this, this notion of Zionism and this idea of Americans in particular saying, well, why don't we just have people just leave? Why don't we just have people just leave? Utah is available. Why don't we just leave? I love the fact that we think humans are chess pieces, that we can move them. In fact, years ago, I'll never forget this, whenever the notion of Zionism first happened, there were a lot of Americans who were closeted anti-Semites who said, this Zionism is terrific. Get them out of here. go. But they pretended. They pretended that, yes, we're with you. And then we have the eschatological Christians who also hide behind something. There really isn't some a connection with the Lamb, per se. So we have all of these cryptic kind of camouflaged people parsing words in order to fit the narrative they want. I still say, like we've said before, if I remove the term Israel-Palestine and put party in the first part, party in the second part, you wouldn't be able to handle, you would be have a much easier time addressing this. But when you put the identities of these countries in, it changes everything completely.
You know, Judith, what's really sickening for to watch all of this here is that we have the Netanyahu government. There have been leaked documents about how they want to displace, push the Palestinians of Gaza into the cyanide. And countries in the Arab world don't want to participate in essentially what would be a genocide, certainly ethnic cleansing. Judith.
Yes, just to clarify something about the genocide part. I think it's very clear, you know, even before the Holocaust, that the intention was to, by the Zionists, was to rid Palestine of Palestinians. Ilan Pappe documents this in the Dalle plan before, even that was put in place even before the Holocaust. I think there's a problem with, of course, the idea that everybody can be expelled, which would be to the Sinai. That's the last thing I read, that it would be the responsibility of Egypt to take in all these refugees. It's genocide by this understanding the sense of the word. Not parsing it out as it's done so much by the highly legalized.
Judith, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the events unfolding in Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Toronto. Judith, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you. Could please continue with your comments?
Okay. No, I was. I think that the problems are both complicated in a sense, but also very simple. You know, I think it's very clear Israel's intent to eliminate Palestinians, and a lot of the parsing around the genocide law has to do with whether there's an intent and who is the. But it's not specified who is the intent articulated by. In often Jewish discourse goes back to the model of the Holocaust. And in fact, Israel was reluctant to recognize any other genocides.
That's right.
Other than their own. So, and the UN has been really utterly flawed, not just around this, but so many things, but it's highlighted by the response to this, that, Guterres is so incompetent, I think, with the whole structure of the UN, the Security Council, and so on. But, going back to all these massacres and so on in Israel and Gaza, the UN, often declares it's almost a humanitarian disaster. It's almost this, or it could be. It's the same thing with the starvation of people around the world. It could be a disaster. So, the collusive effect of, yes, of all this, is really, so glaring with respect to this, this current horrible, atrocity that's
been
perpetrated.
But what it does, Judith, number one, it shocks the conscience. And then, if you just watch, then you're part of the problem. And I think that's what so many of us feel watching this, feeling powerless because our leaders are blinded by neoliberal ideology and historical prejudices and aiming for political gain, all of these short-sighted things, when we're losing our we are collectively losing our humanity by watching this here. Leila, let me go back to you in Beirut. One of the things that's really quite surprising this time round is that Israeli Hezbollah has not worked very well. They've been caught deceiving people, lying people, all of their evidence of this and that. We have this latest weaponization of rape without any evidence whatsoever. I mean, they're going to great lengths to change the topic. And Israel is the victim. Go ahead, in Beirut.
Israel is the only case of an entity that plays the victim for killing somebody. So basically, they take the role of a victim while they are killing the victim. And I am very happy to actually to see the collective consciousness around the world and conscience around the world. People are taking to Twitter, to social media, to fight this propaganda. Nobody buys Israeli propaganda anymore. In the past, Israel had to stick to one narrative and then push it through mainstream media. Social media wasn't that strong, but now with international social media, like basically reaching everybody through phones, through your tablets, wherever you go, through your watches, people are now opening their minds and they are awake to such lies. And most of those lies are so flagrant without any evidence. People need hard evidence at one point or another. I also want to thank a collective hard work by not only people across the world, but also reporters across the world who took the time to actually debunk those propaganda narratives. And it was so easy to do it. I'm one of those people. And I found it very, very weird that the Israelis are just throwing anything, any propaganda, and they're hoping that it sticks. And everything is just falling apart.
Yeah, I've been watching the evidence, quote unquote, here, and it's so easily debunked. I mean, very easily and very quickly debunked. A picture of a rape victim, and then a reporter, an investigative person, said, "No, that's a picture from Kurdistan. Okay, that's from that's a Kurdish picture from a year ago, 2 years ago, but that's not today." And it was just debunked. And these people that print this and send it out on social media as evidence, they're not even ashamed of themselves. They say, "Thank you for your interest." I mean, it's shameless what's going on here. Lionel, is there anything that's going to reverse the Biden administration? But the first quote I read here from the retired IDF General Yitzhak Brick, I mean, he says it all here. I mean, so the ball's in Biden's corner here. But he doesn't seem to have any inkling to change course whatsoever. Is it politics? Is it ideology? Is it prejudice? Why?
It is first, I don't want to jump on the Biden bandwagon. Peter, let's just remove
President
Biden.
No, they're in power. You got to hold people account in power. Go ahead.
No, I understand that respondeat superior, you know, he has to take blame for this. But he's not really, I don't know who's pulling his strings. But I got to say one thing about this. You know, Marshall McLuhan had this great line one time that said that little lies are hard to keep under wrap, but big lies are easy based on their incredulity. The greater, the worse, if I were to say, for example, that in Egypt, right now, there's a group of people who is involved in satanic vivisection and animal sacrifice. And people would say, "Oh my God," the horrors would basically forge their belief, not cause question. Remember the woman who said, though she testified among other people, how she saw people during the Iraq War pull babies out of incubators, and it was so horrible that for you to even question it, whenever you question something that is so horrible, this is when you should be even more scrupulous. Because once, and here's the thing, once you are caught in a lie, whatever it is, this is in real life or international politics, you are forever tainted. Nobody believes you anymore. So the question right now is, Peter, here as we are 300 or something days until the election, there seems to be this sleepwalking on the part of the Democratic Party. They don't really know. Because let me just say something very quickly. The people, everything has changed. We have a very serious Jewish contingent in this country that represented historically a pretty solid liberal base, historically, now fighting, joining sides with hardcore, and I'm using these air quotes, right-wing people, and you have a complete switcheroo, a changing of partners. So I do not believe the Democrats in particular have the political wherewithal to be able to play this 4D chess and to make sure that their message comports with whoever's going to be making the decision in 2024. So just hold your breath and watch.
Yeah, well, I don't understand why it's just hard to say killing people is wrong, funding people that kill people is wrong, and you can't do it in my name. This is not complicated stuff, folks. Judith, you know, going back to the issue of Zionism and anti-Semitism, what is attractive in the West about Zionism? Because all through my life, I've been around Jews, and most of them just say, I don't have anything to do with that. That's not Judaism. That's not my faith. And they're really insulted when people think that all Jews are Zionists.
I think that you're right. You know that there's a large, obviously, you know, many Jewish people are utterly appalled, but just like I think the majority of people, you know, by all the demonstrations all over the world are utterly appalled. You know, it's hard to understand the individual thinking. Like there's group kinds of dynamics, but in terms of people, you know, who in any way condone the utter cruelty and sadism, the gratuitous, you know, sadism, you know, killing babies in incubators is so total. You know, it's like it's like worse than, you know, there's so many horrible wars and atrocities, but this is, it seems to me, the very worst manifestation of cruelty that's perpetrated without any hesitation, without any kind of, moral conflicts. So, coming back to, you mentioned neoliberalism, I think that that's, you know, in terms of who's behind all the power, you know, that there's the political, ideological part, but there's many ties between Israel and the most autocratic governments all over the world. There has been for a long time, you know, including certainly the United States, Saudi Arabia, and so on. You know, that there's a very extensive military connection, like, you know, in terms of manufacturing weapons components, you know, the use of surveillance, the use of Israeli police tactics, you know, in the United States, India, and so on. You know, there's an independent economy, too, in Israel that's very dependent on weapons, and this is very connected with the U.S., Canadian, German, and so on, weapons, the whole weapons.
Well, Judith, even Israeli weapons have gone into the hands of neo-Nazis in Ukraine. It's very well documented here. You know, let's go back to Beirut. Leila, you know, you talked about the change of consciousness. I think that could be, if there's any possibility of a silver lining here. When I saw American Jews take over Central Station, the train station in New York, you know, thousands of them wearing black shirts saying, not in my name, not again. That brought a tear to my eye because it really showed that there's a consciousness out there and people will not be They're not going to be used as objects, okay? And there is a consciousness that something terribly wrong is going on, and I hope people pay for the consequences. Go ahead in Beirut.
Well, as you know, you can lie to some of the people all the time. You can lie to all of the people some of the time, but you cannot lie to all of the people all of the time. And people across the world are starting, as I said, to awake to these flagrant lies by the Israelis. And the Jews across the world as well, those who refuse to follow the genocidal mindset of the Zionists, basically, are finally coming out, and they do have a voice now. They do have a place to reach, for their voice to reach, which is social media and people supporting them from across the world, not in my name, finally. And this is what gave them strength, is the collective conscious, as you said, across the world, that actually is helping them go out and say not in my name, as well as human beings across the world are siding with the Palestinians based on humanity and nothing else. But I also want to point one thing, which Judith said.
I'm sorry, I have to jump in here. We've run out of time. Absolutely fascinating discussion and very humanistic, I must say. I want to thank my guests in New York, Toronto, and in Beirut. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.